Hi, my name is Jamie Mackay and I head the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching Programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And this podcast is part of a series where I ask established arts educators about their practice. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be talking to Johanna Smith. Johanna is a Professor of Puppetry, Theatre Education and Entrepreneurship at California State University, San Bernardino, and the author of Puppetry in Theatre and Arts Education, Head, Hands and Heart. Could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Sure, I'm Johanna Smith. I am a professor of theatre education at California State University, San Bernardino, which is about an hour east of Los Angeles in Southern California. And I've been there since 2000, so a bit of a time there. And in my duties, I teach a lot of different theater education, but my specialties are in puppetry and puppetry for the classroom specifically, and improvisation. And recently, I've started teaching and being part of our entrepreneurship program, which is very fun and interesting.
Thank you very much. When you're working with learners, what is your goal?
That I like that question a lot. I also like how you say learners, and I'm going to say it the ugly American way. Learners is much more pretty in Scottish. But when I'm working with learners, I am looking for, quite simply, moments of delight. I'm looking for those sparks where what we're doing transcends normalcy and reality, and we're sort of transported into this other space that only the arts really create. So that's my favorite question, actually, to ask children, especially, which is, when were you delighted? What moment can you point out where it was really delightful? So that's what I'm the most inspired by.
And what barriers get in the way of achieving that goal?
Well, here in Southern California and in the United States in general, there are some interesting issues at the moment. That being said, I should start with something very positive, which is here in California, we just passed a measure to put millions of dollars into improving arts education in California for young children, especially. So that's huge for us. It's a really big deal. There's so many artists in California, but there are larger issues in the United States. In particular, one is cultural, which is the arts are not necessarily valued as much as, like, if you talk to my students' parents, for example, they'll be like, why are you pursuing a theater degree? Why aren't you getting a real job or whatever? I don't have that problem with my future teachers as much, because teaching is seen as a very pragmatic, important job for a lot of my students. But still, within that, the arts are less valued completely. I mean, it's very interesting, especially because I'm sure everyone's been reading the research supports what we do, right? Like, so our practices and our research and our connections to cognitive development and brain research is very, very clear. So let's see. Oh, there's one more thing in California in particular, and I'm only sharing this to complain, which I got asked to do a puppetry series, like a teacher training using puppetry, which I love to do for a school district. And we're delayed because they still don't believe that a major public university has enough insurance to cover my presence in their classroom. So that's just like normal here. It's just completely like, what? Okay. So just the fact that things get stopped and restricted and things are litigious, you know, it just really puts a damper on things, but usually you can get through it.
So what strategies do you use to achieve your goal and or deal with the barriers that you face?
I am a relentless optimist, so I'm not very good at accepting no right away, which has been very useful. The other thing I think my training in the arts has given me is an ability to see other ways, you know. So For example, in this example I just gave, not being able to go into a classroom as me, we found a workaround. So I'm going to be hired by an arts organization that's already in that school. So as their employee, I can go in and do whatever I need to do. And it just bypasses a whole problem. So it's also just being willing to ask those questions. So just like, does it really, do we have to do that? You know, and you'll find that a lot of times people aren't really quite thinking, like they're just doing what they've been told is policy. And then when they stop and think about it, they're like, no, I don't have to do that. But again, like I said, relentless optimism and cheerfulness too really helps.
And how do you measure your success as an arts educator?
This one's hard. I think like most of us, it's all tangible things are difficult to identify. Like my favorite things are notes from students or a message from a student like 20 years later who says, you know what? That was really cool. That was really amazing what happened. But it's taken me that long to have those moments appear. So in my first few years of doing this work, I just had to trust it. I had to trust the experience in the moment in the classroom. And then other things have happened that are the result of putting written work out there in the community to be part of the sort of the conversation of what we do as arts educators. So finding that community with other scholars and researchers and starting collaborations and all kinds of connections, like for example, what we're doing right now, you know, like that's, I think, a very tangible result of effective work.
So how would you describe the ideal relationship between you and a learner?
Oh, I wrote something down for that. Yeah. I think I'm trying to turn a phrase here, but I don't know if I've been watching too many puppet shows, but I really like the idea of being a bit of a whimsical trickster, if that makes any sense. I think it's because of my art forms being improvisation and puppetry. What I do is inherently just so silly. And so I love to use the word meaningless because my boss, Peter Schumann at the Bread and Puppet Theater would always talk about how puppetry is so meaningless. Therefore, it is everything. It means everything because you're doing it just to do it. And it exists just so fleetingly. And I like to do things like get students to do things that reveal that they can perform and that they are interesting and they are talented before they get a chance to be nervous about it or realize that. So I always like to, I'm sure a lot of other educators do this, where you've set up a situation where they're going to do something really cool no matter what. And then their confidence gets a big boost and we can build from there. You know, it's just, I like to start off with something really positive that way.
And what job title are you most comfortable with?
I like teaching artists. I do. I like that it encompasses everything, but here's another thing I'm dealing with. And I don't know if this is because of the institution I'm part of, but lately I've been trying to reclaim professor because, I mean, if you look at, I'm not necessarily taken 100% seriously, in the spaces where I am allowed access due to my title. So I kind of want to start really owning the fact that people like me are professors, artists are professors. This kind of thinking and being is just as valid as so many of the others. It's just we have a different way of going about it. But if you ask scientists, for example, like I get a lot of fun comments and ideas from our science faculty. Like I've been asked to collaborate on more puppet shows with the biology department and our water resources center than many other groups, because they're like, no, the creativity is where it's the same thing. The creativity you bring and the creativity of the science work that we're doing, they're the same. So that's been kind of fun, but getting back to professor. Yeah.
Okay. So what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
So yeah, I had to write that one down again. Oh, because okay, here we go. Oh, I hope this one I'm assuming almost all of us have this one, which is my work is student-centered. Very much the student is exactly what I'm doing. I'm not looking for some authoritative guide from, you know, in my case, policy, but I'm looking to the students themselves to help guide me. And it's a very much a two-way interaction, sometimes more ways. And I think because of my experience with the Bread and Puppet Theater, I can't separate my beliefs about environmental activism and what I do as a puppeteer. So I use found and repurposed materials almost exclusively. And I do not want to bring anything toxic into any kind of environment. So I don't use them myself. And I've held pretty firm to that, even though in Los Angeles, it's kind of hard to do. It's seen as very backwards because in the movie industry, everyone's, you know, making robots and doing all this other stuff. And I hold firm. I'm like, no, paper, let's go to paper. Paper's great. And also like revisioning or reinterpreting the normal, like things like one of my favorite things to use is just plastic garbage bags to do stuff. Literal trash. That's one of my favorites. And then let's see, the third one I wrote down. Is that this is obscure. I learned this though from my friend Gina Pavlova, who's a Bulgarian puppetry director who is just so brilliant. If anyone reads Bulgarian, she's written some wonderful stuff. I don't read it, unfortunately, so I have to have her tell me. She came up with the phrase less is enough. And I love that so much. And it's not less is more. Everyone hears that one, but less is enough. Like we can trust that. My favorite example is a child can just pick up a stick and that stick becomes a sword. It becomes an airplane. It becomes a dragon. It becomes, you know, it becomes everything that child could imagine. And that's where the power is in that educational moment. Like it's the child doing it. It's not the stick, right? So so I kind of see puppets the same way. Like they're less important as objects, and it's more important what they bring out of children. I think that was three. Yeah.
It was indeed. Great. Thank you.
Excellent.
So we're going to do a slight shift here, but it may connect to what you've just been talking about. If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
So many people I want to talk to. There's, I've had such wonderful mentors and experiences, but there's one person I never got to meet who I would have loved to meet. Unfortunately, she passed away. Her name is Nancy Renfro, and this is really obscure, but she essentially started like puppetry and education for young children. Like that's her. She wrote down her practice, and she worked with a scholar named Tamara Hunt at the University of Hawaii. And they were the first to sort of write down why puppetry works to educate young children in particular. But the best thing about her is that she was an artist. She was also deaf. So kind of baked into my practice and the practice of most puppetry educators, because we're building off of her, is inclusivity. It's just in everything she did. I mean, the fact that she was deaf was just like just another thing. And so therefore, thinking that way, thinking like, oh, if I attach a puppet to a child's wrist, if they don't have mobility in their hand, they can just use their arm, you know, or if they're in a wheelchair, then we can make it this character. We can do this, we can do that. And she just was so, like she came up with the simplest ideas, but they're all just so wonderful. Right. Like, so I would love to just sit and sign with her. I would have to sign with her, but that would be, probably my choice.
So if you could ask her one question, what would it be?
I think I want to ask her, because I was trying to think, like, I'm trying to think of people like she resonates with me so much because she is truly a teaching artist, like very amazing artist as well as teacher. But lately I've been struggling with this question, which is how do you balance trusting your experience and intuition and gut feelings as a teacher in the classroom versus being up on all the latest research and having more of a grounding in theory and things like that. Because lately I've been finding myself stifled because I think, oh, I haven't read enough about that, or I'm not ready to do that. And it stops me from trying things. And so I could be very, very wrong, but my instinct is that she was not like that, that she would just jump in. And I like to think so anyway, but I think that's why she also accomplished so much.
So the question would be just how is she kind of that
balance? Yeah, like how do you balance trusting your instincts versus traditional research and expectations of the field, if that makes sense.
And how do you think she would answer it?
I think she would just laugh at me. At least I hope. I hope she would just be like, who cares? I like to think she'd be like, I'm doing it. And, you know, this is what has to happen and it's the right thing to do. So I'm going to do it. And I could use some of that energy.
Absolutely. Thank you, Johanna.
Sure.
But in the final question, then, is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
I wake up every day feeling like I have pulled one over on the universe, so to speak. Like I've been actually talking a lot to people in entrepreneurship, which is a strange, like I said, the fact that I'm in entrepreneurship is strange, but it also makes perfect sense because one of the things that I've been really pondering and thinking about and also sharing with entrepreneurs who live in this business world where they're only thinking of like multi-million dollar budgets and stuff, which is what is value? What do you value? What's important? You know, and if you talk to any of us arts educators, what we value looks very different and it's just as important. And it's especially important to live, I think, a good life as a human being on this planet, you know, and to make things better. I think that's part of what I value. Like, am I improving things? Am I working towards environmental justice or justice in general? What am I doing? Am I doing all that I can? And then, so then changing that perception, like I think I told my entrepreneurship boss, I was like, if you give me like $4,000, for example, I can make the most amazing things happen. Like I could use that and I could transform a space or a classroom and we could have so much fun and it would be so great. But in their mind, they're not thinking, what do you get out of it? Because I'm just thinking what all of us do, which is like the experience is what we're thinking about. Of course, there's survival. That's part of it too. But also, but that's not at the forefront, right? So what's at the forefront is how can we get the most out of this potential? So, yeah.
Well, Johanna, thank you very much. It's been fantastic to hear your responses to these questions. Really rich responses. And I'm sure our listeners will be very keen to find out more.
Oh, so, have them call me. Call me. Talk to me. I'm bored. I'm on sabbatical. Yeah.
You will get calls. Excellent. For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.